All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Sandy Williams. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Dave from Mech One has been hanging on. Hey, Dave, I see you. What's going on?
Hey, good morning. It's a shame. I wanted to ask Matt a couple questions. And, you know, the thing is this. So I was listening to the conversation with the FICA taxes and everything else. What's going to end up happening, though, is right now the FICA tax, I believe, is capped at $147,000.
That's what he said.
But it's adjusted for inflation every year. So what's going to happen is, eventually, that 147 is going to eventually move up to where it gets to that threshold where eventually one day it will meet 400,000. So naturally, everybody, you know, is going to be in that predicament as far as, you know, paying between 6.2% between the employee and the employer. Because I'm self-employed, I end up paying both of those. And what it's going to do, and what I don't think people realize is this, anybody that's close to that threshold around 400,000, they're going to go under that amount. So they're not going to pay that additional 12.4%, because if you really look at it, why would you, you know, for the extra, you know, a little bit of extra money, why would you pay that additional 12%? You know, going forward. So I think there has to be a discussion with that. That's number one. And number two, the thing that I didn't realize this, when my father took his Social Security at an early age, and because a lot of seniors have been doing that because of the inflation that's been so rampant now the last year and a half, you're penalized if you go back to work. And you will end up, your paycheck with the Social Security.
That's correct. You basically give a dollar for a dollar until you turn 67 years old.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is if you go back to work, though, you know, and you don't report, if you're over, let's say you make over $20,000, $25,000 a year, there's additional.
Hey Dave, the way it's set up, is once you take it and you take it early and you under the age of 67 and you are working, it's a dollar for a dollar. So every extra dollar you make, you pay an extra dollar in taxes. Over $12,000. But go ahead.
Right. So again, you know, it's punitive because, you know, when you have inflation and you literally have people now that have to go back to work, they're being punished.
Okay, but
wait, Social Security is COLA adjusted. And so the COLA adjustment has been pretty accurate. So the fact is that Social Security itself isn't enough to not work for most people. So if they don't have a separate income, if they don't have a separate pension, if that's all the income they have, it's very hard for them. But they could have kept working at age 62 if they went back to work. I think the government's thought is, well, you were able to work. You went early on this. We don't want to promote people going early into Social Security. We want to discourage that. Mm-hmm. So they discourage it in that very fashion that you've described for your father. So I'm not sure that isn't without merit. a policy merit. You know, there's an onus to it, and some people suffer the onus, but that was intended by the policy. You know, Social Security is a very interesting phenomena, and it's complicated, but it's definitely something that the U.S. government can't do without. And the 401k program has not been adequate. It's clear that people would have to exercise savings discipline beyond the maximum 401k contributions to be certain that they could have an adequate income in retirement.
You know, Sandy, and you stated off the air that it's going to be even more important as we move forward.
Well, I mean, one of the things, Dave, you were talking about is how inflation is going to get that 147 adjusted all the way up to 400 some point. Well, of course, the dollar will have depreciated. That inflation does reflect a reality with respect to the value of dollars. And all of us are both earning money and paying taxes now at a far bigger number and a far, it's astronomic compared to what I paid in 1968 or, you know. But I was doing just fine in 1968. With my income, which was double digit, and was living an affluent life. So I don't think you can take those inflation numbers and try to scare people today about the fact that when it gets to when inflation gets us up to 400, that it's going to be something to argue about. You know, inflation.
Well, all I see is this, is that the dollar, you know, obviously the dollars that you have saved is becoming worth less and less every day. It's taking a bite out of the apple every day just because even with wages going up, it's not enough to compensate for the inflation that
The whole idea, though, with respect to 401ks was that it would be invested, right? And investments definitely can include inflation hedges. And there's no question that people who've been invested in stocks, for instance, have done far better than inflation over the long period of time. They aren't doing better than inflation over the last running 12 months. But they are doing a lot better than inflation over the last 25 years.
But the percentage of people that are in the stock market is very small. Now, granted, there are public pensions that are obviously tied into Wall Street, but their pensions are going to be affected if slower growth occurs and what have you. And then have to make up the difference in the pension. And so you have that culmination of where you see, like the state of Illinois is a good example.
Well, wait, David. Just before we get mired in the in the forest of all these trees, what you're talking about is you're making the argument against the privatization of Social Security. That was the argument that was being made against what President Bush was recommending in 2004, and I agree with it. And that is that individuals left to their own predilections are going to be hard pressed to take their 401ks and get them all properly invested in the stock market and to properly hedge themselves against inflation. Social Security is hedged against inflation. The problem with Social Security is that the absolute dollar amount of it is inadequate for most people. I mean, it's barely adequate. So, and so that's how people get pressed. The COLA adjustment built into Social Security is the CPI, and the CPI adjustment comes pretty close to taking care of Tom, Dick, and Mary's increased costs year to year. But the problem is Social Security puts you in a very close pinch with real expenses.
But again, though, Sandy, if you look at what Social Security, if you look at what people are getting, it's been eroded as far as buying power is concerned, because even with the CPI, and they use numbers.
David, even if the ebbs and flows of the stock market and the ebbs and flows of all of these things happen, at the root of all of it is it a meritorious idea? And long term, is it serving the purpose that it was created for? And the answer to all those things are yes.
Well, I would. This is the one thing I would say. I do think though there has to be, people are living much longer, and we have to get away from this idea where people can just retire in the public sector at 55 years of age and expect that they're going to just get a pension and everything else until they die.
Well, David, there are people.
I just think we're bopping around from issue to issue, Dave. My sense is that you think Social Security is okay, that you think it's inadequate, that it's not properly adjusted for inflation.
It should be also adjusted for based on age.
Okay, David. All right, David.
All right,
David. Thank you very much for the call, David. Thank you very much for the call. Go ahead, Sandy.
No. I just think that, in fact, David there was what he was describing was not really a set of conservative arguments that would be against Social Security at all. I think he's in favor of Social Security. He'd like to see it adjusted upward, in fact, in some respects, or adjusted for age. Anybody who's relying on Social Security is hard-pressed to make it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's true, but they are making it.
Yes.
And it requires pulling in one's horns to an extent that might be uncomfortable. And so Social Security for lots of people is a supplement to other things for them. But for some people, it's not a supplement at all. And in fact, it is an important element of our safety net. It was built in the 1930s to recognize the fact that when people reach the end, when the middle-class workers of America reach the end of their working life, they needed some help and some support from the government because they couldn't be expected to go to work themselves.
Sandy, and it's been providing that.
Yes.
Nobody can argue about whether or not the purpose in which Social Security was created has served the function that it was created.
Yeah,
to do, and there are people who, and sometimes I think we forget that there are so many people who rely on that. It's as meager as it can be sometimes for people who work their entire lives and never really made a lot of money. That's there to at least know once a month I got that coming. Let's go to CJ. CJ, what's going on, man?
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, and I do love Connor's music. I miss his visits. He doesn't pick up anymore. I don't know, maybe he's tired of me too, like a lot of the other hosts. But
that's not true, CJ.
This monstrous bill that was passed this weekend, what did the Congressional Budget Office score that? Yep, not going to do a thing for inflation till 2031, and you got to guarantee me that these entitlements are going to be adjusted between now and then. Not going to happen.
Well, CJ, let me just ask you a question. I was talking off the air with.
So let's do this before we get into this. Yeah. Let's go to a break. Tom, I see you from LA. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You guys hang on. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. The Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ quickly. CJ, what's your point?
That this is another big lie.
Well, CJ, I think before the break,
$739 billion is going to do nothing to do. What's the name of this bill?
Who cares?
Well, so
what's
see,
the name of the bill?
Well, let's go. Let's get back, CJ, to what you said before the break, because I wanted to talk about that for a minute. You were talking about entitlements, and people talk about entitlements, and I'm not sure which entitlements you are referring to, but incidentally, for instance, Social Security is spoken of as an entitlement, and you know, an entitlement is what someone is entitled to receive, and the person who's obligated to pay it it's called an obligation. And so if you enter into a contract with someone, CJ, and they're supposed to pay you $100 a week for the next 5 years, you're entitled to receive that $100 a week for the next 5 years. And the person who's obligated to pay it has an obligation. So people choose politically to call this an entitlement, but what it really is an obligation. And Social Security is certainly an obligation. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. Okay. But when does it go on
and
the
Medicare,
black, Sandy?
And Medicare.
If nothing is done.
Well, Medicare.
Does it go on the black?
We just had CJ, we just had the conversation with Sandy and Max about that. So if you didn't hear it, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sandy.
And Medicare as well. Medicare is an obligation. It's something that people depend upon legitimately because it's and there's a number and almost all of these other payments about which the government has no choice have been set up by Congress as government's obligation to make payments. So instead of calling them entitlements, at least when we talk about it, let's talk about obligations. And so then what you want to question is the government's obligations and how they might modify those obligations. And what are the obligations that you are identifying in this $790 billion bill or whatever dollar amount you attach to it? What are the new obligations that you're now trying to entitle entitlements in that bill? Because my familiarity with the bill is somewhat limited because it hasn't been itemized for us. But that a great deal of the expenditures involved in it involve renewable energy and other forms of climate, anti-climate change kinds of expenditures and supplements. And that sort of thing. What is it that you are troubled about in this bill that you are calling entitlements?
I'm not saying that the bill, other than subsidizing China's companies through this global warming debacle.
CJ, just so we can get, I just want to understand what we're declaring to be a debacle. Is the debacle whether or not we have global warming? Are you suggesting by using the term debacle with respect to global warming that we don't have global warming, or we do have global warming and it's an impending disaster, and you're just calling that disaster a debacle?
I believe we're coming out of an ice age, and man has really little to no effect on this, and we're punishing our country.
Can I finish? Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sandy, because you keep going down the history road. This bill is going to hurt our entitlements because no one's going to address them. I do want my Social Security, but like I guess I did miss the first hour. And I'm sorry, because I would have loved to heard your explanation that if nothing is done, it's hard to argue with Santa Claus, Sandy, and that's what your party is better at than the Republican Party. This would shove down our throat in a matter of days, and they throw the prescription drug thing in there.
Hang on, CJ. It was shoved down your throats because Republicans have refused to even address the issue.
Well, wait a minute. This bill was originated a year ago, almost at the very beginning of the Biden administration. It was one of the first things that was laid on the table. It's been negotiated and pared down materially from what its initial proposal was. But incidentally, the Tax Reduction Act that was adopted during the Trump administration was jammed down our throats in a matter of days. So I don't think you're really troubled by legislation that is rushed through the legislature. You're troubled by legislation that
didn't go your way.
Passes the legislation.
You never answered the question, though, Sandy.
What's the question?
What does the Congressional Budget Office say about what this lie is going to do?
CJ, number one, when the CBO comes up with ideas about proposals from the Republicans, you guys dismissed the Congressional Budget Office. Now, all of a sudden, because it didn't go your way, now you want to dismiss the Congressional Budget Office.
Well, you know, quite frankly, the fact that this is called the Inflation Reduction Act doesn't really focus on what the bill does, and whether from a PR standpoint the politicians decided that was a better way to sell the bill to whomever doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but it doesn't do what it says it's going to do, does it?
Cut him. Let Sandy finish his thought. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, the problem is that if you want to focus on that name, whether or not it accomplishes is less important than what the bill does accomplish and what it does focus on. And clearly, one of its main focuses is climate change. And it appears to, now we'll see about whether the programs that it sponsors and funds under it end up being successful. But it's clear that the substantial expenditure in it is related to that. What he doesn't like about the bill is the fact that it includes some tax increases for corporations. I'm not sure he's really thought that through, but the minimum tax on corporations, the 15% minimum tax, is going to collect a bunch of additional money. A tax like that does, in fact, have an anti-inflationary effect. So, you know.
Well, Sandy, what he and others like him don't like is, for once, it didn't go their way. You know, the things have been going their way. They didn't win on this one. And so that's, you look at Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, and I'm listening to them explain this. Well, people are going to pay a price for this. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. There are people who agree with this bill, right? It's not just people who disagree with it. And so there are people who think it's the right thing. Sandy and I were talking about it earlier. Many of us wanted to see some other things in the bill that impacted and affected each and every American citizen and not just corporations. But, you know, it's showing an opportunity that people are going to address what is a serious issue globally. And if Republicans and like CJ and others don't like it, you know, tough it out. You know, man up. Got to go to a break. Tom, I see you. 844-967-2789. We'll come right to you on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, the Republican Party is the party of pro-death and pro-murder. One thing that people need to understand is that Social Security is an earned benefit. It's something that we paid into, so it's something that we get back. It's an earned benefit. Democrats, if you look at it, and I wish CJ would look at it, but I'm not going to really talk about someone that's as nonsense as him. But Democrats invest. They actually invest in things so they get actually something back from it. Republicans spend. They spend because they get nothing back from their return on investment. They lower taxes for the billionaire class. No return on investment there because all they do is hoard their money. They don't have money. They have to worry about spending that money. Second off, they go to war. They spend, and both parties are guilty of this, but they spend money on military weapons that are like fireworks. They go up in the air and they go kablooey, and then that's it. All they do is, with war, is throw over a bomb somewhere and make everyone, you know, pissed off for another generation or two. So, you know, investing in something, because I'm a businessman, I'm a small business owner, and I believe in return on investment. And I believe that if I'm putting $5 into something, I should get $10 back. We all know that food stamps brings back 60% back from what it is that they actually invest. So I hope people will start realizing, I noticed the media can't do it because the media this morning right away was saying the biggest spending bill or spending bill. It's not a spending bill. It's an investment bill. It's an investment in our future. It's an investment in our children. It's an investment in our planet. And, You know, if you're against the idea of even your local area being cleaned up with pollution or whatever, you know, then you got some really, really big problems with being so self-absorbed that you don't understand that we are all in this together. Thanks a lot, Earl.
All right, Tom, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, the fact that, you know, CJ, he's not alone. I watch many of the Republicans and listen to conservative talk over the weekend and even some this morning. Really, really angry and frustrated, and they're saying this bill has been shoved down their throats. You pointed out, Sandy, about that when you pointed out to CJ about Donald Trump's tax bill, that was there were no Democrats who said yay to that, and we have that as a reality now. So what's different? You know, I mean, that's the way politics work, right?
Well, unfortunately, sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, maybe it shouldn't be that way on either side. Maybe things should be more transparent. Maybe there should be less monetary involvement in politics. Maybe that Build Back Better bill ought not to have been modified the way it was. Maybe it should have been even presented with different proposals in it that would have been even more profoundly investments in America. But I do agree with Tom that the biggest thing that we have to see is that we're all in this together, and what we don't have in America right now is a culture that looks at things that way. We don't have a community view of things, and in fact our sense of community is being eroded daily, and it's being eroded in large part by the political process and the cultural movements that are a part of that political process that see the benefit of dividing the community instead of unifying the community.
You know, Sandy, you can look at something like right now what's happening with flying in this country. Both parties need to recognize this is a serious issue, a serious time, and they need to work together to repair what is wrong with air traffic right now, and the problems aren't going to be cured overnight. And so wouldn't you think that both Democrats and Republicans could say this is at least something that we certainly need to look at and collectively work to get an answer for this? Well, no, Pete Buttigieg, he's got to fix this, and this is the Democrats who have brought this on. I mean, come on. Many of the airlines, Sandy, during COVID got bailed out. They took the resources and got rid of the higher paid people and said, listen, we want you to retire. Excuse me, we want you to retire. We'll bring in younger people. It'll be cheaper. We'll make more money. And that was the way they looked at it, Sandy. They didn't look to see long-term if this would have ramifications.
Well, it's hard. I mean, the problem is that when government does something, there are plenty of unforeseen reactions to it. And so a lot of the benefits that were sent out to the businesses during the pandemic.
And for the right reasons.
For good reasons, right. And good motivations, and they were sent out on a bipartisan basis. But how those things get utilized and what kind of unforeseen reactions there are to them are the kind of things that now are the fallout that the airline industry is experiencing with the loss of its experienced personnel and shortage of pilots and shortage of personnel. You know, I think that that Congress would do well to be focusing on the supply side of many things, because this inflation is in large part a shortage-driven inflation. And our economy is going to be severely impacted by the shortage, and it'll be severely impacted by inflation. It's also going to be is severely impacted by shortage. If we could solve the supply side, the shortage side of things, we would find inflation would be mitigated materially, and we'd be keeping people in their jobs and solving our economic problems in a very positive manner. If politicians get paralyzed centralized in their processes, can't focus on the supply side, leave it to the Federal Reserve Bank to solve this problem with higher interest rates, we will have a recession. Tom, Dick, and Mary will suffer the brunt of that. The increases in interest rates will take money out of Tom, Dick, and Mary's pockets. It will also, when it finally creates a recession that reduces the number of jobs, it will take jobs away from them. So what Congress really should do is come up with thinking outside their old box and thinking toward the future and working hard on, for instance, shortage.
You know, Sandy, I never will forget early on in our relationship when I first met you and started having you on, and you were constantly talking about the supply side of things, and you kept pointing out, and at that time, who was it? Was Donald Trump? Yeah, Donald Trump was the president.
Yeah,
and he was talking about the supply side of things, and you said, it's very complicated. It's very complex. If he messes with the supply side of things, never forget when.
That was to do with the tariff battle and what it was
right.
What it was
going
to do to the parts business,
yeah, right.
and all of the supply chain issues. And I said, look, this is a really complicated thing.
Yeah, you did.
If you mess with it, you can really create problems. And it is the supply chain as well as the pandemic. Those two things coupled together have created serious shortage problems across the board. I mean, airlines is just one thing. It's the HVAC business. It's every business. Every business.
So, and so instead of the people realizing how critical a time this is, Sandy, and putting aside all of those petty things and planning, it gets worse and worse and worse. And the worst part about it, Sandy, is there's no quick fix to this, is it?
Well, it's not a quick fix, but I think there needs to be a lot of attention paid to what is going on in the socioeconomic system that is the United States and the world that is creating all these shortages. We have personnel shortages all over. We have systemic shortages. We have shortages of every conceivable kind of widget.
All right, got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, I want to go back to China and Taiwan. And had this listed as something I wanted to talk about, but I didn't get into it the way that I wanted to. And as China is watching as senators push for more support for Ukraine and Taiwan, the Chinese are really focusing, paying attention on what's being said. Two senators on Sunday urged the Biden administration to go further in its support for both Ukraine and Taiwan as U.S. tensions with China bubble up after, you know, Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. In an appearance on CNN's State of the Union, Senator Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal, Democrat and Republican, backed the House Speaker travel to Taiwan, tied the two foreign policy issues together, warning that China is watching how the U.S. continues to respond to Russia's attack on Ukraine as the war nears its sixth month. Graham directed his message directly at China and pushed for the passage of the Bipartisan Taiwan Policy Act, which is aimed at bolstering Taiwan economically and militarily. So, Sandy, don't we have enough trouble?
Well, I think we do, and I think again, like I was saying earlier, this is all about domestic politics, and it's a domestic politics that is not educated by or informed by our actual foreign interests and the real strategic foreign interests we have, as well as the historical actions we've taken with respect to our international relations with a country like China. China is a very major country, and we're tinkering with it like it's not. Russia is a major military power in the world, and we were tinkering with it like it's not. In the way we dealt with Ukraine, for instance, and now with the way we're dealing with Taiwan. Both of them have some similarities. Taiwan, we have recognized it unofficially with deliberate ambiguity in the one China policy as being part of China. We keep talking about it as if it's an independent country. We've never recognized it as an independent country. We've always said that its status is unresolved, which was a way of saying it's not clear exactly how it's going to become a part of China, but it's a part of China. And yet we do these things, and domestically we treat it like it's a foreign country. China is going at some point to absorb Taiwan in the same manner that it is in some manner absorbing Hong Kong.
And we can't do anything to stop it.
Well, not only can't we, but why
should we?
Why should we? And really, why would we? And the only reason we would is if we decided domestically it's somehow a measurement. We had a caller last week who wanted to talk about the Nancy Pelosi in a sort of a profane manner as to what kind of a private part she might have as compared to Biden. And it was all about the machismo of our domestic policy when we talk about such things as Ukraine or Taiwan, because we're always talking about us against them. You know,
yes.
China and us. We got to win it. It's like the NFL. We got the San Francisco 49ers, China. We got Russia. Those are the Bears. And we in Green Bay got to make sure we whip both of them, you know. And that's sort of the way the country is dealing with these discussions. But we have a long history with China. And that history is one that involves this 1979 treaty, which we've kind of stepped back from unilaterally along the way, and more recently have accelerated the rate at which we step back from it. The same thing that we were doing with respect to Russia, not with respect to a written treaty, but with respect to unwritten understandings. It also has to do with hegemony, this notion that there is a geopolitical power that relates to China and relates to Russia. And our domestic politics seems to want to ignore that. We want to ignore this notion of hegemony other than for us, which we're willing to exercise all over the world. You know, everything is within our hegemony. Nothing is within China's or Russia's. And the fact is that when we treat them that way, we are poking the bear, and we're creating exactly the kind of reaction which we expected. We knew that China was going to react in a significant manner to a visit from Nancy Pelosi, and we did it anyway.
Yeah, well, they warned us.
They told us.
Yeah, and when you look at the impact of what the message that they are sending, they certainly, as we stated earlier, are sending a message to America, but they're scaring the bejesus out of Taiwan. Can you imagine?
Well, you know, Taiwan lived under an autocratic rule until essentially 2019. They're probably happier with the kind of democratic rule they have right now. But quite frankly, the last thing in the world they want is war. And I suspect if you went to Taiwan and said, here you have these options. You can get rolled into China and be dealt with as if you were Shanghai, or you can have a massive war to defend your status as Taiwan. I suspect most of the Tom, Dick, and Marys in Taiwan would say, "Yeah, we'll be Shanghai. That's okay. Shanghai is not such a bad situation. Shanghai is the biggest city in China, and Taiwan would be a major province of China." And I think if you went to Tom, Dick, and Mary in Ukraine, you might find out the same thing. Right now, they're finding out that there are lots of people that are wartime Ukraine is calling collaborators, but in the peacetime they would be called dissidents, political dissidents.
So, Sandy, we are saying to them, you need to ramp up your military. This is what we're saying. Graham directed his message directly at China and pushed for the passage of the Bipartisan Taiwan Policy Act, which is aimed at bolstering Taiwan economically and militarily. What would be the point?
Well, isn't that convenient for the military-industrial complex of America? Because, let's face it, when Taiwan bolsters itself militarily, who do they buy weapons from, and who does that bolstering?
Sandy, it just comes to a point where there's no reason for Taiwan to bolster itself militarily. Who are they worried about? If anything happens with China, there's no way they're going to be able to bolster themselves militarily to deal with China. That's the only entity that they have to be worried about militarily, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And the fact is that the more we create this potential hostility with China, the more aggressive China can be or can rationalize being with respect to the whole South China Sea. You know, they're clearly trying to set themselves up to defend themselves against something. Who in the world could they possibly be worried about defending themselves against?
Well, that's absolutely correct. And again, all of these things, and Sandy, it's why it's so valuable to have you on and talk about these national and international things that we many times are either too busy in our lives to be focused on, or we just don't think there's anything that we can do about it.
Well, we pat ourselves on the back for being the most powerful country in the world, but we forget then that, I've said it earlier, this sort of Newtonian principle of for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. The world is watching what America does very closely, because we are the biggest gorilla on Earth right now. And so when we do something that's hostile in the direction of a near gorilla, a Goliath like China, they take notice, right? And their whole concept politically within and geopolitically and sociologically within China is, why is the United States acting like that? What could they possibly have in mind? And if the shoe was on the other foot, we'd be thinking the same way.
Yes.
And we are thinking the same way.
So, Sandy, if you're looking at globally, if you're looking at this little population of people, the United States, a speck on the global, you know, map, not land mass-wise, but just people.
Yeah, 5%.
Yeah. And you're saying, hey, look at these people. What are they talking about? They're the most aggressive nation on the earth.
United States.
Yes.
Yes.
Anybody outside of our nation knows that, except for the people inside of our nation, unfortunately, who don't want to look at that. And then because if you really look at that, then you would question what we keep doing. But we don't want to look at that, right?
A guy another guy on an airplane had a conversation with me. At the end of it, he said, because I was having sort of this kind of a conversation about China and how China's economic trajectory was clearly going to lead them to the top of the heap.
Right.
And he said, you need to think about what will you feel like when the world is dominated economically by a country like China? I said, I don't know. How do you think Norway feels in a country that's dominated by the United States? I said, they do just fine. You know, I'm not sure it's a problem, but the only answer he had for how do you stop the domination of China was military, okay?
Yeah.
And that's what worries me. I think the United States is hell-bent to exercise its muscle, and it's all for fear of economic domination.
And the rest of the world sees it that way, too. They see it the same way you and I see it, and that's their fear.
Yeah.
And that's why they're doing what they're doing. All right, got to run. And then we say, don't let Iran get a nuclear weapon. We can't let them get a nuclear weapon. And the American people say, yeah, no nuclear weapons for Iran. You can't have any. Got to go. Thanks for making the show go. Thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. Thank you, Sandy. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. I'll be doing a live remote tomorrow evening. And we'll let you know. See you later. You know those, Sandy.
Your man cheating on you hurts to be alone. But you gotta keep keeping on. I know you find a way out.